You take the good, you take the bad, you take the facts of life and the made-for-TV movie Satan's School for Girls. And what do you have? Hell in a Handbag Productions' new show, The Facts of Life, Satan's School for Girls, which hilariously combines the campy 80s sitcom with Kate Jackson's devilishly outrageous made-for-TV movie.
Did we mention it's a musical? The new show stars Chicago cross-dressing comedy legend Ed Jones, who pays tribute to Charlotte Ray's quintessential role as school marm Edna Garrett in The Facts of Life.
Today, Ed Jones joins us to talk about bringing some of our favorite campy divas to life on stage. Joan Crawford, Betty Davis, Lana Turner, Cher, Suzanne Summers, Betty White, Paula Abdul, Paul Lynde, and Mrs. Olsen from Little House on the Prairie.
Plus, how Lily Tomlin changed Ed's life forever.
Cher at 50,000 feet. The gay twist to the classic Twilight Zone episode.
And what did Ed say when he met actress Carol Lynley, who played Nani in the 1972 classic The Poseidon Adventure, while dressed as her character?
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Become a member and support this show at feastoffun.com/plus.
Will you give me a test of your voice? Just
was that good?
You sound great. And a very, very Ed Jones kind of sound.
That was my spooky Halloween sound.
It was terrifying. Our guest today is a dear friend of ours who for decades has played or parodied on stage some of the campiest divas ever. Ed is currently bringing Charlotte Ray's Edna Garrett from The Facts of Life back to life in Helen Handbag's new Halloween production of The Facts of Life, Satan's School for Girls. The show is now playing at Hamburger Mary's in Chicago until November 2nd. You don't want to miss this one or the devil will get you. Welcome to Feast of Fun, Ed.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
It's been a long time. This podcast started as a musical variety show that you were participated in many, many moons ago.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you played?
No. There was a couple of characters and a couple of things, but it's been a long time.
It was a long time ago. You've done so many characters over the past 20 years in your acting career here in Chicago.
Yeah.
A great artist is born to find out what the story they were meant to tell, and they just tell it over and over and over again. And in some ways, you know, a lot of these characters have something in common, that there are these kind of larger than life feminine archetypes or gay archetypes who always seem to fumble, who are lovable because they're struggling.
I think it's interesting because when I was growing up, I was a very lonely child, and books became my friends originally, and then I turned to movies, old black and white movies, and I started to really relate to these very dramatic, you know, Joan Crawford and Betty Davis, and so just...
Do you remember watching Whatever Happened to Baby Jane as a kid?
I was old enough to remember it, but it was like... I just seeing it like on Sunday matinees and late night movies. I would wake up and turn on the TV, you know, and while I was supposed to be sleeping and in bed, and I would catch these old horror movies and stuff. And I just fell in love with it. They became my playmates in a way.
Do you remember the first diva you fell in love with that you started imitating to your friends?
Wow, that's a...
I'm kind of giggling right now because I'm just like, every single utterance of your voice kind of reminds me of some happier performance that you did as Paul Lynde or as Charlotte Ray.
Well, yeah, Paul Lynde was, I certainly remember him growing up on seeing on TV, and there was just something about him. Mm-hmm. It was just like, he's different. But I could relate to it, you know, and
Samantha.
Yeah. So and Bewitched, of course, he was Uncle Arthur on that. And so I now got to play that character in the musical Bewildered, which was a parody of Bewitched. And
how did you sound like Paul Lynde?
I have to get into it. I, see if I can remember any of the lines from it. Pass. I don't know. It was just it was something that I would have to get into.
Chiffon.
Yes.
Hurry up. This is taking too long. He was very an impatient person and very angry. You know, he had a lot of gay rage.
Yeah, he went to. Yeah, I think he became a bitter alcoholic toward the end, which is very sad. He went to school here.
Northwestern.
Yeah. Along with Charlotte Ray and a few other people. Let's see. Who was it that was Cloris Leachman, who ended up actually taking her place in Facts of Life. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's in the final season, Charlotte Ray was too big of a star and had to quit.
They couldn't meet her salary demands.
What was up? Because that show was on the show for 9 years, right?
Yeah.
And then, but eventually they left the school and she opened a restaurant or something.
Yeah, Edna's Edibles. And then that burned down and I think they had another place.
It was called Over Our Heads.
Yeah, Over Our Heads. And that's when
Cloris Leachman came in.
Yeah, and her character was Beverly Ann Stickle, I think.
So the original idea was to create kind of an ensemble show with child actors, and it was an anchor for Charlotte Ray, who was a Broadway legend, right? And
she started out as a comedian, a musical comedian. I think she actually released an album in the 50s, songs I taught my mother or songs I never taught my mother, and they were just these little ditties that I came across it when I was researching. I wanted to hear what she sounded like when she sang. Mm-hmm. And so I came across it. I was like, she released this album.
Can you imitate that for us?
Let's try and find a little bit of it. I found the music. Let's listen to some of it.
Simple legend. If there's one thing is fun, it is lost. Of a night in the park, I am dreaming. And there am I, naked stark, running, steaming, and screaming for lechery, lovely lechery, and I'll take nothing else in its stead. I've tried archery, I've tried butchery, I've tried witchery, naturally bitchery, but I always return to and yearn to and burn to what's easier done than said. Give me lechery, simple lechery, if there's one thing is fun.
For the show, before I go on, I try to find her voice. I just say, girls, girls, girls. I just say, girls, 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 over and over and over again until I kind of just feel it. I get that vibe.
Instead of me.
Good idea, Blair. Girls, girls.
That's kind of how what Claire Foy did to play the queen. She was just like, in order to get the voice, I would just say the word one. One. Because I could do that over and over again. And then I would have her voice down. One.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like I'll get a phrase or a particular line for a character that when I'm doing it, before I go on, because I don't do impersonations, so I just have to kind of.
I think you're actually pretty good. The thing about it is that you naturally do sound like Edna Garrett, you know. Like I'm listening to your voice, and I'm like, you actually just your everyday voice does sound like Charlotte Ray or Mrs. Olson from Little House on the Prairie. What does she sound like at different? She's like,
Nels!
Yeah.
Yeah, she's...
Charles?
Exactly.
And so in terms of like this strange, wonderful career that you have, when you first started out in theater, did you set out to be like, I'm going to be a cross-dressing comedic actor?
No, not at all. No, I studied theater in college. Mm-hmm. I got a degree, a bachelor's arts and sciences in performing arts at Virginia Tech, also known as Virginia Polytechnical Institute, and which begs the question, why would I go to study theater or performing arts at a technical school? I didn't start out, you know, in theater. I started out as a computer scientist.
So you have brains and beauty.
Yeah, I got it all. I tell you. actually, it's an interesting story because I had a little nervous breakdown when I was studying computers. This was a long time ago. And this was like, I didn't know, right? Yeah, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And in high school, there was this new class called computer science class. And I was like, oh, it's different. It's new. I'm going to study it, you know, take it. And I excelled in it, but it was just, we didn't have the Googles or anything back then, you know.
It was
I still had a set of encyclopedias.
Tapes, right?
Yeah, it was like punch cards and things like that.
You know, I wrote a program that calculates your birthday 10 years from now. Good job.
Yeah, and basically, and so I was like, okay, well, I'll go into computer science. And so 2 years in computer science, I think it was my third year studying, my project was artificial intelligence. I was trying to program a computer a chess game that could play itself. And I was just kind of wasn't getting sleep. I was also at the time exploring my personal life because I didn't have one really in high school and growing up. So
your sexual identity.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're slutting it up.
Yeah. And I was like experimenting with drugs and
all right. Like
that. And I became an on-air personality at the radio station, and they were at the radio station were partiers. So I started getting my first taste of partying, you know, and going out. And so I was being drawn into that and away from my books, which had been my friends for so many long time. And
your books, your bottles became your new friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So your life was really like a 1980s John Hughes film. Yeah. Where the nerdy student cuts loose and becomes the life of the party.
Yeah, and I just couldn't sustain that. And I just had a nervous breakdown. And I was like, I realized this is not what I want to do. I don't want to be a computer scientist. And so I switched majors and I got permission from the dean to be able to go into advanced acting classes rather than, you know, having to spend 10 years before I got a degree. Mm-hmm. And, but it was interesting because then I came in on the third year of advanced acting classes and everyone is like, who the hell are you? You know?
Did you get all the lead roles?
No, but I did get some choice roles and people were just like, what? Who is this person? And what, you know? And
why do you think you were getting cast for the good roles at that time?
Because I was good looking. I don't know. I really
why did you
know.
Ace the audition?
I because I was different. Mm. I was specific.
You gave them something. You didn't give them generic. You gave them Ed Jones.
Well, I was the person to go to person when there was ever any experimental theater.
Oh, so you're willing to do anything.
So I wasn't good. I wasn't being cast in traditional theater roles as the lead, you know.
So you didn't play Hamlet.
No. I wasn't even considered for that type of stuff. But I was like when we did a production of Hair, though, I was fair game.
Hair's
like,
naked.
Oh, let me take my clothes off.
Hair, but a lot of people don't know Hair the musical is traditionally done. The opening scene is done in the nude, isn't it? The main character comes out naked.
Well, we didn't do it that way. We did have the scene where
in
colleges
they usually put an American flag speedo on the character for a little more modesty. Yeah. But in Broadway, it's usually been done with a nude actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we did do the nude scene where
in the middle of it.
Yeah, where you could choose. We as cast members could choose whether we wanted to do it.
And did you do it naked?
Well, some nights, yeah. If you felt it and you felt safe, there were some nights where, yeah, you did it. I mean, the lighting was done. It was very creative lighting, but there were some nights where it's just like, meh.
So you graduated from college, you packed up your bags, you were going to come drive from Virginia all the way to LA, but you decided for some reason to stop in Chicago.
Right. Yeah. I was going to move to, the plan was I was going to move to New York.
Oh.
After college, after I got my theater degree, I was going to move to New York and become an actor in theater. Mm-hmm. And I was really green, you know, I was really naive. And my parents, I was like, oh, I don't know anybody. I don't have a job. I don't have an apartment there, but I'm just going to go. And I just expected my parents were going to foot the bills. And they were like, no, we're not going to just give you a blank check for you to go move to New York City where you know no one. You don't have a job. You don't have a place to live. And so I said, okay, well, I will get a job and I will work and I will raise the money to take myself there. And, so I got a job as a cashier at a supermarket.
Big money, man. Big money. Is this like a Winn-Dixie?
Food Lion.
Piggly Wiggly?
Food Lion. I think it was called Food Lion.
Okay.
And that's what I did, though. I worked in the days as a cashier, and then at nights, I watched old movies. And like I said, they became my friends. And at that point, I was like, I don't want to do theater. I want to be a film star.
Mm.
So I was like, I'm going to move to California. I'm going to move to Los Angeles. So I got in the car, packed up, drove. I'm driving through the Midwest. And my first stop, I think, was not Hammond, Indiana. It was Fairmount, Indiana, which is, they were having James Dean days, or it was around September 30th. And they have an anniversary of his death. They do a big festival. And I had seen the films of James Dean, so I was just like, this was right up my alley. And it was amazing. Everyone in that town was so welcoming and everything. And I remember pulling up in my car. It was like a Chevy Chevette, and I pull up my car, and I was like, I was standing across the road from his farmhouse where he grew up in Fairmount, Indiana. And I'm taking pictures, and it had just rained earlier and the ground was soft, and I realized that my car was stuck in the ditch. So I'm like, oh God, what am I going to do? I'm spinning out. I'm not getting anywhere. I don't know anything where I'm at or anything, but I see there's some farmhands. It's a still working farm, and there's some farmhands over there. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to get up the strength and go talk to them and see if they can help me, or, you know. And they were just like, oh, sure, no problem. They came out and they pushed me out, and they were just like, you know, they showed me around. They were like, oh, this is where, you know, James Dean cemented his handprints, you know, when he was a teenager and stuff like that. And they were very welcoming. Then I went up the road where the church was, where his cemetery, where he's buried. And I go visit his grave, and I get back in my car, and it won't start. It's just dead. I'm like, what is going on?
You're like having bad luck.
I'm going to be, maybe I'll just live here in Indiana, in Fairmount. And so I pull out a map, and I'm like, well, maybe there's other things I can do within walking distance. And I'm looking at the map in a half hour, and then I just say, well, let's try the car again. And it starts right up. So I go to his high school, where he went to high school, and I take some pictures. And I go to get back in my car, and I've locked myself. I locked my keys in the car.
What a day of hell.
Yeah, the window was
and
cracked.
And it's raining outside.
Well, it had been raining. Yeah. It wasn't raining at the moment. But my window was cracked like half an inch. And I'm like, I'm trying to stick my fat hand through the window. And I'm like, the window's going to break. And then I'm like, I'm going to cut my hand. I'm going to die here. So these kids came running up, and they were like, what are you doing? You know, and I was like, I've locked myself out of my car. And they went and got their mother, and their mother was like, had a wire hanger. And one of the kids actually.
Did you get in?
Yeah. Unlocked it. And then went on and came to Chicago. Finally made it to Chicago. And I got a ticket to see Lily Tomlin, who was performing at Search for Signs of Intelligent Life.
One of her greatest works of art.
Yes. Yeah. And
co-written with her partner.
Jane Wagner, yes. And I had Time to Kill before the curtain, and I think I was in the Palmer Hotel, the lobby. It was just killing time and just hanging out. And I saw her. She was there. And I was like, you're Lily Tomlin. And she's like, and I'm like, I'm coming to see your show tonight. I have tickets to see your show. And I was like, can I have your autograph? And she's like, well, come to the stage door after the performance, and I'll give you my autograph. And I was like, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. So I went and saw the show, which was amazing, phenomenal. She plays all of the, you know, the characters.
Yeah, Ernestine,
it's a one-woman show. And afterwards, I was green. I didn't even know that, you know, waiting at the stage door was a thing. For some reason, I didn't click.
It was impossible to
stalk
them.
So I didn't know if she was really going to come out or anything. But anyway, she opened the door, and it was just me and one other person who was waiting for her. And I think she thought we were together, that was my friend. But I didn't know this girl at all. But she invited us in backstage, and she was very welcoming. And, you know, she gave us a tour, like, of the backstage, like, on the stage. And she asked me about myself, and I was telling her, and she was like, oh, well, yeah, if you graduated in theater and you're a theater person, you should stay here in Chicago rather than move to California.
Lily Tomlin told you to stay in Chicago, and you stayed in Chicago.
Yes. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Don't ever take advice from celebrities.
So did you only plan on staying in Chicago one night? What did you
do? Like one day. The next day, I got in my car and I continued. I was going to continue on to California. Mm-hmm. And I got to St. Louis, the Arch. And I remember thinking...
The gateway to the West.
Yes. And I remembered all my car troubles in Indiana. And I'm like... What if I don't even make it out to California? I'm like, maybe this is a sign saying I should stay in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I turned the car around, came back to Chicago.
You didn't know anybody?
Went to apartment people or apartments and said, can you show me an apartment? And they showed me an apartment and I signed a lease. And then I went back and got my stuff and then moved here to Chicago. That's how I ended up here.
That's extraordinary. And so tell me about your audition, your first role in drag, like when you first started getting typecast.
As a woman.
As a
middle-aged woman.
My first role was Claudia Allen. I think one of my first roles that was a drag role was Claudia Allen. I auditioned for Claudia Allen, who was a well-known playwright here in mm-hmm. Chicago back in the day. And she wrote gay and lesbian themed plays. And she wrote this soap opera called Gays of Our Lives. And I auditioned for it, but I didn't get the part, mm-hmm. but she liked my audition. And so she wrote a part for me for the second episode. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a Marilyn Monroe impersonator. but a bad Marilyn Monroe impersonator.
Oh, okay, I get it now. So,
I'll do anything.
Yeah, so
for a good role.
And I think that was my first drag role. And then I did Ku Klux.
What?
The Claudia Allen show was for Zebra Crossing Theater, which is a now defunct theater in Chicago. My credits, I have many, many theaters who are no longer around.
Well, and
for
people that don't understand Chicago theater, a lot of it is what we call storefront theater.
Yes.
So people will get like an abandoned store. They'll create a theater within that storefront, and then they do shows there. And some of them, they do phenomenal work. Some of them last. Some of them grow. They become phenomenal things. But, you know, a lot of times they just kind of, they're there for a brief period of time, mm-hmm. and then they're gone.
Yeah, they're friends that graduated from a college together, and then they're like, let's create a theater company. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you
started becoming known for sort of playing these comedic roles. Interestingly enough, you're a very sweet, very mild mannered, very kind person. But on stage, you're this like dynamo, badass, sarcastic. Is there a side to you in there that gets to be expressed? Or is it fun just because those characters are very different than you?
Well, I think it's a combination of both.
Mm-hmm. You're getting out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, exactly.
You get to be the rebel you don't always feel comfortable being in everyday life.
Right. It's just not really me. I'm not in those situations where, you know, that are created in the world of a play. So it's nice to be in that world where I can just let loose. And we know
some actors that in some ways resemble the characters that they play. And our dear friend, David Serta, who started Hell in Handbag Productions with you and other people from, what was the name of the company beforehand?
Sweetback Productions.
And then there was Sweet Corn.
Playhouse. Sweet Corn Playhouse was a theater that was shared by two production companies. One was Sweetback and one was Corn Productions.
That's right. And so they combined it to call it Sweet Corn
Playhouse. Yeah.
And the first thing I saw you guys doing was Valley of the Dolls. And for a lot of people don't realize the shows that you guys do are original scripts that parody the films. Yeah. But they're in some ways like David calls them a homage and a parody or has some word that he fuses
to. Paramage.
Yeah, paradage.
Because sometimes people are deep, deep fans of these works and they feel like you guys are making fun of them.
We're not, though. Yeah. We really love the characters that we're portraying, and we love the movies that we're paying homage to and parodying.
But you have been accused in the past of, like, how dare you make fun of the, and you're like, what? I love this show too.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And so now you're bringing, you know, Edna Garrett, Charlotte Ray, to life in this is very like American Horror Story meets the Facts of Life. And in the show, Edna Garrett is a Satanist who runs a school for girls. Young yeah. satanic girls.
Yeah, it's a homage and it's a paradoxe of Facts of Life, the beloved 80s sitcom, and Satan School for Girls, which was a made-for-TV movie starring Kate Jackson.
Oh, I didn't realize this was another source material, too.
I forgot about that movie.
Yeah, Kate Jackson. It was an Aaron Spelling produced made-for-TV movie.
Because sometimes, like, with David's shows, you're like, why is he making this really strange choice? It makes absolutely no sense. And then you're like, oh, this is based on a movie. Oh, that makes total sense.
Okay.
Now.
I didn't realize it was a mashup.
Like, the custodian in this is, like, just out of left field. But now that you realize that it's based on a film, then you're like, oh, okay, so people. So do you feel like, you know, in some ways it helps to be familiar with the source material before going to see the shows?
Yeah. Oh, I think absolutely.
To get the jokes.
Absolutely.
The in-depth things.
And we can tell that when the audience, when they have seen it, because they get the end jokes, that are sprinkled throughout. I mean, we always, I think David always makes an effort, though, that the work can stand on its own. But it's very much, I think audiences get a lot more out of it if they're familiar with the source material, for sure.
I mean,
Well, we definitely, you know, Faust and I grew up watching Facts of Life. Yeah. And when I was in high school, my friend Ed said, Lisa Welchel is performing at this church. I'm like, do you want to go? I'm like, I grew up Catholic. We were Catholic kids. Like, well, you don't go to a church to see a performance, you know? Yeah. Maybe if it was a choir or something like that, I don't know. And so I just thought, well, that's kind of weird. It was the First Assembly of God church. And I said, all right, well, I guess I'll meet you there, because he lived in a different part of town. So I rode my bike there. He rode his bike there. And then we met, and like, this church was crowded. I was like, oh my God. So we had to sit like on the sides. And then all of a sudden they started having this, you know, Protestant service, evangelical servants. And then people started getting up and speaking in tongue. And I was just like looking at him like, what the fuck is going on? Because, you know, I was green too. I was naive, and maybe I had heard about speaking in tongue and stuff like that. But it's like, you know, culturally, it wasn't like in the zeitgeist at the time. So it wasn't like something you really even thought of. And so somebody would get up, they'd start speaking in tongue. And what I didn't realize, and it was explained during the service, is when somebody speaks in tongue, somebody else has to stand up and translate what they just said, or else it's not the true word of God. You know what I mean?
And wait, Lisa Welchel was
she was like ultra religious.
Was she speaking in tongues?
No, she didn't speak in tongues. So they had this long-ass service, and it was a long service before she came out. And she came out and she testified about her love for God and Christ and all that kind of stuff like that. And then she sang a couple of songs, maybe two or three songs. And I think she probably took a couple of questions from the audience, and like, that was it. And I was just like, that was the weirdest thing I had ever seen.
I can imagine. I was actually concerned, because I knew that she was
a holy roller. There,
yes. And I was concerned. I was like, are we going to get a cease and desist? Like, if she finds out about this, you know, because she's very protective,
I think. What do theater... You guys have gotten cease and desist before. How did you guys handle those things?
We ceased.
Really? You lost money because you had to stop doing a show?
Well, we...
What show was it?
The Rip Nelson Halloween special was originally a parody of the Paul Lynn Halloween special.
Okay.
And there is an actor who owns the rights. I think he does this show. He goes with the Paul Lynn show, and
he pretends to be Paul Lynn and does.
Yeah, he
show.
Does. He does it. And he's got the blessing of the family, the estate, or sister. And so he sent us the cease and desist and said that you can't do it. So we just made up a character. We just called Rip Nelson, and he was a combo of like Paul Lynn and
Rip Torn,
and
who unfortunately just died, right?
That's sad.
Charles
Nelson Reilly was definitely.
All those, hi everybody! You know, that dynamic plastic voice that you and I have in common, but Mark doesn't.
No.
Mark's like this. Hi, this is Mark Phelan.
You know. But speaking of Valley of the Dolls, though, it's funny because when I I was told when TJ was writing the script, I was like, is there a part in it for me? And he was like, no, unfortunately, I don't think there's any part for you.
Oh, that's
and
terrible.
I ended up playing, what, 7 different characters
in the show.
In the show. And it
like, well, part of it is like you're easy to work with. You know, I've worked with you and you strike me as you never complain. Whereas a lot of actors are like, this script is so dumb. Or they're like, this show is taking too long. This rehearsal is taking too long. I have to be somewhere at 2 o'clock. You know, and you're like, and you show up, you're like, hi, I know this is going to be hard. We did a show that was a parody of a lot of things, but it was basically a circuit party that had booked Anna Nicole Smith as its entertainer. Anna Nicole Smith was too high to perform for the circuit party where everybody was high. And you played her assistant, Curtis.
Oh yeah. That's
Pennyweather.
Right. That's right.
And our friend BC Colts played Anna Nicole Smith. And she would say very deep philosophical questions. Like, why does everything have to be so hard? And you're like, oh, just do the damn lines. And it was really...
Anna, you were so thin before.
Chum spa, baby.
But now you're so heavy.
Tiramisu, baby.
She pulled out tiramisu from her purse and started eating it.
And lots of... I mean, there's just an elaborate, like, scenes where there was, like, you were juggling, like, 12 different props, and all of them were, like, half of them were actual real food items, so... For this, we had like gone to the grocery store and just had a bag of groceries, and you were like backstage juggling to make like a cheeseburger you could throw on her. And then you would give her a tiramisu and all this stuff and a bottle of pills, you know, and Tic Tacs in there.
And I do remember that.
And there was just like, you know, and to me, it was just a wonderful moment to get to know you better as a performer. And since then, you know, it's like you've done so many wonderful roles that navigate that sort of a very dynamic gay, you know, Paul Lynn, Charles Nelson Reilly kind of space, and the angry woman diva like Joan Crawford or Betty Davis or something. And you sort of like bring a sweetness to it that, you know, for certain, and I feel like with Charlotte Ray as a Satanist, it's the role you were born to play. To some degree.
It's interesting because I've gotten a lot of people say, I've really waited to see you in this part. And I'm like, really? I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Because people say ridiculous things to you and you go, all right, okay.
Tootie.
Tootie.
Oh, but speaking of cease and desist, we were going to do a remount of Valley of the Dolls. And I was going to get to play, instead of the 7 bit parts, character parts, I was going to play Helen Lawson, which is one of my dream roles. And we got a cease and desist.
From the estate of Jacqueline Suzanne.
I think it was the movie company.
Mm-hmm.
So
how did they find out?
I don't know.
Were you guys already in rehearsals and stuff? And they were like, or was it pre-production? They're just like,
yeah, it was pre-production. Word got out.
Who's leaking that?
I don't know. I think we have suspicions.
But. So it's like angry people who didn't get cast in the role. They're the right to the.
Well, there are other companies and other places like who wanted to do a production of Valley of the Dolls, and they were turned down. So
when they got found out, they ratted on you.
Yeah, they were like, "Are you able to do this?"
If it's a parody, though, don't you have some wiggle room with that kind of stuff, or is it expensive and it's still hard to do?
Well, you'd have to get lawyers involved, and that's expensive, and it's almost just like not worth fighting. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, people always ask me like, "Oh, well, don't you have the copy?" Like, I designed a bunch of pride flags that have since been stolen and marketed everywhere. The lipstick lesbian pride flag, the Puerto Rican pride flag was designed by me, and you know, people are like, "Well, why don't you just sue them?" And I'm like, who am I going to sue? Yeah. The Chinese factory, the thousands of vendors that sell these things. Like, you know, copyright law is a privilege for the wealthy. And if you are not a wealthy person, you don't technically have any right to your material.
Yeah.
And conversely, if you do something that resembles, if Hollywood or a corporation wants to shut you down, they can just send you a cease and desist letter, even if your work isn't derivative of theirs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, be like, I mean, think about John Cameron Mitchell that you're wearing the t-shirt and Jane County, you know, Jane County's like, what am I going to do about it? I just have to learn to love it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I kind of got the last laugh with that because Patty Duke came to the Music Box for the showing of Valley of the Dolls, and were able to do a skit where I played
Helen Lawson.
Helen Lawson, and I had Patty Duke rip my wig off. It was like,
put it in the toilet.
Well, we were on stage at the Music Box
Theater. I would have brought a toilet.
I wasn't prepared.
Go to Home Depot, get a toilet. We can return it when we're done.
I wasn't prepared, but I got to sing my own tree, for the movie.
Did you tell her the Broadway doesn't go for booze and drugs? So that she's just like, I have a medical condition.
No, I just started upstaging her during the photos, and then she was like, "I'm gonna rip your wig off."
Really?
Yeah. It was all in fun. It was all in jest. I was like, "It was a dream come true to have Patty Duke rip my wig off as I was dressed as Helen Lawson." So.
Oh yeah, that doesn't happen to very many people, does it?
I think that's probably one of the most lip sync scenes from any film. It for drag queens is the exchange between Patty Duke and Helen Lawson and Valley of the Dolls. And anybody who's you can Google that on YouTube, but it's they're backstage and Patty Duke is trying to make a comeback to Broadway. Right. And Helen Lawson, who's based on it was Ethel Merman.
Well, I think Judy Garland was originally cast.
She was originally cast to do that. Yeah.
And she kept they fired her. She kept all the outfits. Yeah. She was just like, she's coming with me.
Yeah. You can see her pictured in concerts wearing those. It's like, it looks really familiar. And it's like Helen Lawson's dress,
And so she says to her, it's like, looks like, showing your face around here. It's like, and Broadway, what is the exact same line? Broadway doesn't
come
go
crawling back.
Booze and
so you come crawling back to Broadway. But Broadway doesn't go for booze and dope. And she's so mad at her, she just says, "You bitch," grabs her wig and flushes down the toilet. And she has this ratty wig. And ridiculously, the butler or the I guess the person
bathroom
who's
attendant.
Bathroom attendant says, "Ma'am, shall I escort you in the back?" And she's like, "I'll go out.
Hey, I came
in through that
she
front
puts
door.
Her scarf on over her, wraps her scarf over her head, makes a grand exit.
And I've seen a lot of drag queens, they take plastic dog poop and put it on top of it with toilet paper on the wig to make it more ridiculous, One thing that I absolutely love that you did was portraying Cher. There was you guys did a tribute to sort of the Night Gallery and Twilight Zone, where you guys did campy queer versions of the classic Night Gallery or Twilight Zone episodes. And in this William Shatner is not seeing a monster at 20,000 feet, 50,000 feet. He sees Cher
on the wing of the plane.
What happens in that? For people who are not familiar,
the gremlin is Cher.
Yeah, and she's got a saw, and she's trying to saw through the wing of the plane,
and she's lip syncing.
She's lip syncing to her song,
and you're Cher.
Yeah, I was playing Cher. Yeah,
it was kind of an easy role though, right? Because you just come out, get on the wing of the plane, lip sync, right?
It was just getting into the makeup, and
we interviewed Chris Matheson. He came out with a book called "The Story of God: A Biblical Comedy About Love and Hate." He also wrote Bill and Todd's Excellent Adventure and Two, and the movie that's coming out next year. Well, his father wrote that episode.
Oh wow!
And so we told him about that, and we told him because it kind of felt like the story when you watch it as a queer person, it has like a gay undertone to it. You have this idea that. William Shatner's character is like a closeted gay guy who's been institutionalized for his same-sex desire, and they're just trying to get him through this, and but he's being tortured otherwise, and he's just like, "I don't think my father had that in mind at all." And I'm like, well, it's certainly to us, it kind of reads like that, but of course, with horror, it's open to interpretation, but he absolutely loved the idea of Cher on the wing of the plane terrorizing William Shatner.
It's one of the most well-known episodes,
it's always in the top 10 list of the best episodes for sure. And that, it was so good that when they came out with the Twilight Zone movie, they kind of remade that with John Lithgow. It didn't come off as gay though with John Lithgow.
No, William Shatner gave it a gay vibe, but with John Lithgow, it's all bad.
All hetero.
L cis het. All bro. You also have taken on some of the most iconic roles of Bette Davis and Joan Crawford. I know that originally, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane Happened. How Whatever Happened to Baby Jane Happened was done. It's a mouthful, right?
Yeah.
It was a stage play based on the books that the actresses wrote about each other.
Yes, it was a behind-the-scenes story of the movie.
Kind of, which was done like on Feud, that TV show. Yes. Feud, right?
But years. Yes. Before years Feud.
Later. Yeah, it was basically. Yeah. Feud. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And originally, you didn't play Bette Davis.
Yeah, I played the maid, Mady Norman, who...
You get killed.
Yeah. Loved her, though. Loved her.
She didn't need to die.
No.
But eventually, you got involved in a band called The Jones... Where you played
Carol Ann.
You played Carol Ann from yeah. Mommy Dearest. And tell the people this band, it was a high concept theatrical, it was a musical offshoot of the Helen and Handbag Productions. Yeah. Where about three different people all had their heart set on being Joan Crawford. So they called it The Jones. And then you played Carol Ann the maid.
Yes.
And not Christina Crawford.
I like to think of her as
reason.
Personal assistant rather than maid.
The personal assistant.
Yeah.
But why didn't you play the, why didn't they cast you as Christina Crawford? It would have been like a natural, well, obvious decision.
The yeah. Jones was the brainchild and baby of David, sort of, who is not a fan of Christina.
Oh, and he doesn't like Christina. Her.
No, he thinks she's lie is all, you know, like he thinks Mommy Dearest was... an embellishment.
Really?
Just to make money. So he didn't want Christina in the band.
Oh, really? She got, yeah. She got tossed out of the band because of that?
Yeah. So I became, I was Carol Ann.
How do you feel about Mommy Dearest? Do you feel it's an accurate portrayal of a Christina Crawford's experience? Or do you think
I don't think Joan was probably the best mother, but I certainly think that Mommy Dearest, the book and the movie, especially the movie, I think was done for... Mm-hmm. You know, it was over the top.
Scandal.
Yeah, I think it was done to sell tickets and make
money.
Well,
without a doubt. Well, the book came out, and then I remember they did a parody on Saturday Night Live. I was a little kid, and I had no idea really at that point in time who Joan Crawford was. But poor Gilda Radner being Christina and being forced to, like, eat this raw meat, you know, kind of got everybody excited about the book and whatnot. And I think that may have influenced the movie in some way. I don't know. Faye Dunaway describes it as being kind of like her character as being kabuki.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I last heard that she was actually writing a book about the experience. Mm. The actress who, she's never embraced the role. She doesn't want to talk about it in interviews or anything. But I think she is so hard up for money these days that she's finally agreed to.
Well, she just got let loose from some other production recently because she just can't show up for anything. Yeah. You know, there are some people that
Carol Ann, the actress who played Carol Ann, wrote a book about the experience, and it's amazing. It's called The Carol Ann Diaries, I think.
Mm. Of playing that character for the film and the repercussions.
Oh, yeah. And her relationship with Faye Dunaway and everything. Mm-hmm. And Faye Dunaway actually contacted her, I think, for notes on her book that she was planning on writing. And she was like,
fuck you, bitch.
Yeah, well, she's like, I wrote my own book. If you want to get, just read my book. Or whatever.
And there it is. Yeah. Well, a lot of people say that, like, you know, Joan Crawford was a different person with her first two kids than with the second two kids. The second two kids said that, you know, she was a great mom. But of course, by that point in time, she'd married Al Steele. Maybe her drinking was under control or maybe not. I'm not sure. But, you know, they say that Joan, she was a blackout drunk. So it's like, you know, if you have a mom who's a blackout drunk, then it's, you know, it's going to be a rough time. Mm-hmm. We interviewed Bruce Valanche.
It's no day in the park. Yeah, no. Sure.
We interviewed Bruce Valanche, and he said he interviewed her because the celebrities would come into Chicago. They'd get a table at the Pump Room, and they'd sit there at a table, and then you'd get one reporter after another. And he said he sat down at her table, and he's like, would you like something? And he's like, oh, I'll just have some water. And he went to grab the pitcher of water on the table and pour himself some water. He's like, no, that's for her. It was not a pitcher of water. It was a pitcher of vodka. Because she could just people can just pound booze like there's no tomorrow. Wow. And Joan
was
one of them.
A great story.
Yeah.
I'd love to be at that table.
You've played Bette Davis.
Yes.
In what?
Scream Queen Scream, where it was a parody of the movie where she plays twins, the evil, the good twin and the bad twin. I think she's done a couple of movies, where she's twins.
Oh, I'm not familiar with it, no.
Yeah, so I played twins. I played two Betty Davis characters. And I had to have... It was just... We had an actress like who had a veiled hair, you know, had a veil over their head, and I had a veil over my head, and I would lift up and talk, and then I would put the veil down, and then I would talk, and the other actress would move her mouth, and it was really
it was like a high concept, weird, very strange.
Yeah,
and of course, you probably most remembered for Rose and the Golden Girls, the lost episodes.
Yes, that's been very popular.
Well, you guys recently had to borrow a lot of leather gear because the Golden Girls go to a leather bar. That didn't actually happen in the show.
A sex club. These are the lost episodes.
The lost episodes.
Because what you guys do, as opposed to like a lot of the queens do in the other cities, is like they just do a straight up TV show. They have the
reenactment
of an actual episode, but you guys kind of create your own ones.
Yeah. We write, David writes original episodes. Mm-hmm. And he's really good at it. Mm-hmm. He can knock them out. Like, we're going to do a new Christmas episode. So.
Do you feel like David should move to Los Angeles and become a TV comedy writer? Or I mean, it's like...
I have thought that, yes. Yeah. I think he would be very good at it because he's able to turn things out so quickly that he's just like... He would be good on something like that.
He's like Jackie Beat. He's just the workhorse in terms of like coming up with ideas and scripts and and just can really
pretty amazing.
Crank out a song. You know, he writes all the original music for this as well.
Yeah.
And he's like, I've seen his working process. He just hums it in his head.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you don't even play the piano. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, it is. He did take piano lessons for a while there, but that didn't work out.
And now you're Edna Garrett in The Facts of Life, Satan's School for Girls, once again, and the role you were born to play.
You think so, huh? I don't know.
You sound like you're kind of hesitant about all this. Like you're like your friends are always convincing you to do the next
role. Are you not into it? No, I am.
I'm very happy that we've gotten really great, amazing reviews, and it's... people are reacting to it, and
there's I don't want to give it away.
Takes a lot out of me.
Go see it.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, it's weird because you wouldn't think so, and I don't know why. Maybe I'm just getting really old.
It's the Satan.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
They're drawing your energy into it.
Yeah, we have been having some weird things happen. Oh, just the last performance, the soundboard went out right before my song, Satan. I'm Satan's girlfriend, and I had to sing it a cappella. You know, the show must go on, and I had to do the
just song sacrificing. Just sacrifice a goat, and everything will be fine. Oh wait,
is there a diva that you're chomping at the bit to play, or you feel like you can't do her for one reason or another?
Well, I did want to play the part in Valley of the Dolls, Susan Hayward part. I've always wanted to do Hedwig. I mean, I won't. I wouldn't be very good at it. But
why not?
I don't think I have the vocal power required to do. You know, like 8 shows a week.
It's an interesting musical because, unlike other musical, it's almost like a solo show that's buffered by backup vocalists and secondary characters. And you know, anybody who takes on that role suffers a lot of vocal exhaustion.
Yeah. I would be one of those.
Have you ever suffered from vocal exhaustion? Or like, do you, I need to protect my voice? Because you're talking or singing too much? Or
well, I'm just doing The Facts of Life, the musical. I'm trying to take efforts to get rest and relax my voice, even though it's not very taxing at all. I want to present my voice in the best light.
You want to bring, Charlotte Rae back to life. And in a lot of ways we have such a fond memories of that character in that TV show that seeing you bring her so flawlessly and then get her to do these outrageous things that the real Charlotte Ray would have never done. Exactly. You know, and there's a, the high point of the show really makes your eyeballs pop out, you know, as other parts of her body pop out.
Mrs. Garrett.
Mrs. Garrett, too hot for television.
Yeah, that always gets a big response. I'm very happy. I always look forward to that moment.
You played Lana Turner in Limitation of Life?
Yes, I did. And I wish more people would have seen it.
Yeah. I mean, it's based on the Douglas Sirk movie, Imitation of Life. Lana Turner plays an actress who is down on her luck, but she luckily finds an African-American woman who will happily be her maid for nothing. Because they're like, we'll get through this together. Mm-hmm. And the African-American woman has a daughter who passes for white.
Yes.
And it causes a lot of problems for the family and for her. How did you guys, how did you guys handle that Limitation of Life?
Well, we had a really good director who was very mindful of the thing. And we had many discussions of race and things like that and what's funny and what's not funny about the show. And we just really, we were all professional, you know, and we had really some interesting discussions. And I loved doing that show, and we all loved doing that show, and I just wish it would have gotten a bigger audience.
The audience just didn't turn out for it? What do you think? Because it's like double Douglas Sirk, is he not in anymore, or is it just...
I just think it was the timing that we did it. There were so many shows playing at the time, and other companies were fighting for audiences. They were like, gosh, you know, like, we're...
Oh, was it?
We're performing to half-filled houses.
Mm-hmm. Was this when Hamilton was ruling the roost and everybody was seeing Hamilton and that was it? Because it really, they say it really crushed a lot of other theaters. Yeah. They were just like, everybody spent all their money to go see Hamilton and had nothing left to go see.
Oh, yeah. Hamilton effect was definitely noticeable for a lot of theater companies.
Well, it's the first time you have like senior citizens listening to rap music and they're like, what? All these words and these rhythms? How exciting. You're like, it's been around for 30, 40 years now.
I still haven't seen it.
Yeah.
No, I still haven't seen it.
It's left town, right?
I don't, or it's leaving soon. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, it would have been good to have a lyric sheet because it is. I can hear the lyrics, but it is feel like, you know.
You really just have to pay attention, which is like most of the time when I go to the theater, I do like to take a little nap in between, like, you know, during certain scenes. And so it's, you know, that you can't.
Mark will be snoring and I'm like, the show deserves a snore.
I did not fall asleep during your show, though.
Thank you.
Thank you're welcome.
We appreciate
both my
that.
Eyes open.
Ed, you're striking me as such a mild manner. It's really interesting how different you are on stage and in your everyday life. Do you see yourself, you know, continuing doing these wonderful campy characters in the future? And what do you think about like your 20 years so far and doing all
30
this?
Years?
30 now. Years.
Well, I've been worrying constantly, nonstop. I just feel like I've become part of the background noise. Almost, you know, I've stopped inviting my friends to come see the shows because
thank
it's
you
always,
for that.
I've
thank
always
you.
Been. I mean, I'm just there. I'm always performing. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a break, and I think I haven't.
Forever.
I haven't I haven't.
But you
I've
enjoy it.
Yeah, know? I do. It's been, but it's more. I
because it's a labor
like
of love. You know that you have a full time job. And
yeah,
you're doing
I feel
this
like it's more
side
like a
gig.
Hobby.
As a way of getting out of the house and meeting people.
Yeah, it's more of a hobby. And it's like, if people want to still cast me, then I'm going to keep doing it, I guess.
Do you still audition for roles? Or do you, like, they just call you and say, hey, Ed, come do this. And you're like, oh,
pretty much.
Okay, all right.
Like, I did the 15-year anniversary for the Factory Theater. Uh-huh. And that was, they called me and said, will you do it? We have a part for you. That
what was the part?
It was White Trash Wedding, I think. White Trash Wedding was the name of the show.
Okay.
And it was a drag part. Mm-hmm. So I played this wonderful, trashy drag queen. Yeah. got to trailer trash, basically. Well, so right. It's awesome.
Where are you keeping all your drag? Do you have like a, when you date guys, do you have to like be like, close the closet?
Right. I have a little part of section of my closet that's just where it's all there.
You know, for a while, it's like, and most, this is true for most drag queens, like your drag wardrobe is bigger than your everyday wardrobe.
Right. Well, that started to happen, but I said, no, I'm just going to donate this stuff to needy drag queens. So aww. I just gave away.
Because you're a tall, you know, you're not a tiny twink, like, you know.
It's hard to find costumes for me.
So if you're like, if you're going to be dressed up as a dominatrix, then pull out the scissors. Let's now, make a costume.
They just, Hell in the Handbag this year just redid an Upside Down musical.
Poseidon
Adventures.
Poseidon.
But you weren't in it.
No, I've done two previous versions.
And you were like, I'm done with it?
Was the original. I did the original. Yeah, I let someone else have the role.
You played Nani, the singer from Poseidon, in the film Poseidon. You guys did a tribute to it.
That's the part that I most remembered by still. I still have people that come up to me and
they start singing. They know me from that.
They know me from that role.
Morning after. And you sing it off key.
Just died too, right?
Yeah. The actress who played it?
Yeah.
I got to meet her, so that was nice.
Oh, because of the musical?
Well, she was in town promoting a viewing of Poseidon Adventure with, it was Ernest Borgnine and Carol Lindley and Pamela Sue Martin. It was
some, oh, wow.
And
what year was this?
It's a while back. Five years? I want to say 5 years ago.
Okay.
But I wore my orange turtleneck. I got a picture with her. Got an autographic picture.
Aww.
And I didn't tell her I played her.
No?
No. I just told her I was a fan of the movie.
So. Were you afraid to tell her? Were you afraid it might kill her? Sorry.
No. I just didn't.
I don't want to get enough cease and desist letters.
I didn't want her to think I was just some crazy person.
But you are, Blanche.
Yeah.
Ed, we love your kindness, your sweetness.
Thank you.
And your outrageousness on stage. It's really nice to reminisce on all these wonderful characters you've played for so many years. And, you know, the Chicago theater community is very rich for it, you know. That was you a debt of gratitude, because, you know, a lot of these shows you've done for free. You've volunteered your time and given hours and hours and weeks and years of your life to bring these wonderful campy moments and divas to life, and that's a great thing to do.
Thank you. That means a lot. No, it does. It means a lot to hear that, because you don't hear it.
And so you've got another Golden Girls coming up for Christmas. What else is up? What's up in your theater life?
I'm taking a break.
You are?
I'm going to do it. I'm just
going to
do it.
How long are you going to take a break for?
Well, I've been putting off some operations.
Oh, really?
like knee surgery. Oh. Yeah, knee surgery.
In Guadalajara.
Yeah. Knee surgery.
That's the thing. It's like wearing high heel shoes, girl. As you get, you know, if you're a drag queen and you've been wearing high heel shoes for 30 years, you're going to have hip and knee problem, you know, especially the ones that are doing all those death drops. Girl, somebody start GoFundMe for some of those Rue girls, because they're going to be in a stretcher soon.
The Drag Seed, the show that we just did, which was a parody of The Bad Seed. Mm-hmm. We had a New York producer come see the show, and there is a possibility that we may be taking that production to New York.
Oh, cool.
For 3 weeks, I think.
Uh-huh.
Maybe. I mean, nothing signed.
Yeah.
But there is a possibility, and it's still
in New York.
Yeah.
Your dream from graduating college is finally coming true.
So after all, maybe that'll happen in the new year.
Yeah.
So
I'll be on Broadway. But you know, Ed.
Leave the booze and the drugs behind.
Yeah. And the dope. Broadway doesn't go for booze and dope.
Oh, we all know it does.
Are you kidding? They're the ones who started it. Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support, because of fierce, fabulous people like you. Go to feastoffun.com/plus and consider making yourself a member. Membership has its privileges, like accessing thousands of legendary podcasts with some of the queerest and fiercest artists of all time. That's feastoffun.com/plus.
Or maybe you'd like to make a one-time donation. You can do that at feastoffun.com/donate, or maybe visit our store at feastoffun.com/store and get yourself a t-shirt today. We're also on Patreon. It's a great way to support the podcast. It's a great little community there, and you can get behind the scenes look, recipes from Cooking with Drag Queens, and Cooking with Drag Queens videos before anyone else sees them.
Yeah, right now we have Jade Sotomayor and Monica Beverly Hills from RuPaul's Drag Race
making empanadas.
Moist empanadas.
And we made some empanadas today, and you had them.
They were amazing.
Best pies in London?
The best.
Yes, thank
absolutely.
You.
They had no human in it.
No human content.
100% human free.
Yes, I'm vegetarian and I loved it. Oh.
And of course, we have a Muffy Fish Basket making some chicken Kiev with a succotash.
Coming soon.
And it's there. It's you can watch the rough cut there. There's a password and you have to type in all that stuff. But go to patreon.com/feastoffun and you can see it. And remember, folks, that Facts of Life Satan School for Girls is now running here at Hamburger Mary's in Chicago until November 2nd. Don't miss this one. Yes. Ed Jones
come see it.
Brings Edna Garrett and all the Tootie.
Blair.
Natalie.
And that's it.
But what about Jerry Jewell? Why not Jerry Jewell?
No.
She came in too late.
Yeah. She was a later season. Molly Ringwald was in it, too.
Yeah, she was in the original. Yeah. She was one of the that got cut.
Yeah.
Oh, really? They didn't like her? So they cut her? Well, or she was
Joey Lawrence was
well, they
on
retooled the show after the first season. There were too many girls to write for, so they cut all but three and then introduced Joe.
Okay.
It's a wonderful show. Praise Satan.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Happy Halloween.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.